It was another truly dramatic night of Champions League football at Anfield. But this time it was the holders who were left stunned after an Atletico extra time smash and grab.
And Morata is in behind and he can finish it here!
Meanwhile, in an empty Parc des Princes, Paris Saint-Germain silenced Borussia Dortmund to reach their first quarter-final for 4 years.
Di Maria, just outside the area, lays it off, driven in, flicked on by Bernat, into the far corner, and right on the stroke of half-time, Paris double their lead through Juan Bernat.
We'll be talking disallowed goals, red cards and super subs right here on UEFA Champions League Match Day Live. Hello, I'm Rob Taylor, and what a night of Champions League football we were treated to this evening. Two more teams put their places in the quarterfinal draw as Paris Saint-Germain and Atletico joined Leipzig and Atalanta in the last eight. Watching all the action at Anfield was Richard Connolly, and keeping across proceedings in Paris was Mike Sewell. Firstly, gents, I want your three-word match reports, please, Richard. Good luck summing that up.
Here's a task. Marcos Llorente's superstar.
And Mike, how about you?
If you'll indulge me, I'll go three syllables. Magnifique.
Thank you very much, gents. More on that in a moment. European football expert Andy Brassel's also with us on the show right now. Andy, what was your highlight of the night?
Just one. I mean, that was an extraordinary, extraordinary game at Anfield. But as Richard said, the highlight had to be Marcos Llorente, the most unlikely of heroes to help Atletico pull off the most unlikely of wins at Anfield.
Yeah, truly extraordinary stuff tonight in the Champions League. A reminder, you can download Tuesday night's Champions League podcast for all the reaction to Leipzig and Atalanta's impressive second leg victories. But let's start with the epic at Anfield. Richard Connolly describes the drama.
Liverpool down the right wheel, Oxlade-Chamberlain getting the ball. Lodi takes, swings it in, Adrian stay behind, the header's in! Atletico Madrid, now the flag's gone up. Simeone was running onto the pitch, Saúl headed it into the goal, but the offside flag went up. Wijnaldum down the right, skipping away from one man, crossing, oh, Firmino this time! No, he's at the post, and he's scored from the rebound! It's Roberto Firmino for Liverpool. Marcos Llorente will try a shot. He scored! A goal for Atletico Madrid, a matter of 3 minutes after Liverpool had hit the front. But here's the away goal for Simeone's team. Marcos Llorente goes on, shoots. Oh, he scored! He's done it again! And Simeone's dancing down the touchline now. And Atletico Madrid might be heading to the quarterfinals.
We're into stoppage time at the end of extra time, and a 1-2 between Marcos Llorente and Morata, and Morata is in behind, and he can finish it here! Alvaro Morata seals a memorable night for Atletico Madrid, one of their greatest!
And Richard Connolly, of course, is with us now. Richard, extraordinary extra time. Sometimes extra time can be a bit flat, both teams having little energy, little to offer, but that was far from it. And I'll be honest, I thought Liverpool had it won. I thought they had it won with that Firmino goal.
Yeah, I don't think that thought crossed their minds at any point, but I think certainly it had felt like that second goal was coming for a large portion of normal time. So when it came so early in extra time, 93rd minute, it felt like a logical extension of what we'd seen, and that Liverpool were the controlling team. And it also felt like Simeone was going to have to shift his tactics in a way that was not necessarily going to be advantageous to his team, that they were going to have to push out, leave spaces that Liverpool were going to exploit, when Liverpool really did offer Atletico the chance to get back in. Now, they were brilliant in taking that chance. João Félix with the composure, and Marcos Llorente became this unlikely hero, the unlikely superstar of the evening, and they took it brilliantly. But Liverpool allowed them that, and that will be a cause of some regret. They had been the dominant force for most of the 90 minutes, but Atleti, of course, defended tremendously well with nothing short of 100% commitment, with excellent organisation, with fine communication, and then they were ruthless in extra time, really ruthless, and they punished Liverpool, who by the end were not just out, but really down too.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you just look back at the game and you think how many teams can make it that hard for Liverpool, especially at Anfield. And I think that really made the difference in the end, because when that goal went in from Firmino, just in the first few minutes of extra time, you kind of expect Atletico to crumble at that point. You look at how many of those players have got fitness issues, how many of those players were really flagging by the end of the 90 minutes, and you can see it all falling down like a deck of cards, like it did, to repeat an earlier reference, in the 2014 Champions League final, when they came so close and didn't get there. But they just found this second wind. They had that window of opportunity. And you can talk about the mistake from Adrian all day and all night, but I think the moment, really, is where Adrian fluffs that kick. And you know, any goalkeeper can do that, especially any player can do that, especially in those conditions. Yeah. And João Félix doesn't stop it and try and whack it back over his head, which I think 99 out of 100 people watching would have done. But he finds the reverse pass for Llorente. And this guy he's brought on to firm it up, to give them extra legs, to stop Liverpool just running all over them, all of a sudden takes centre stage and ends up with two goals and an assist in this really unlikely win.
I mean, the first goal he took well. The second goal, the odds were stacked against him, really. He had two defenders and Milner coming in from
Milner
behind.
And Henderson right in front
of
him.
Yeah, and yep. The second finish, he curled it using the defender as a shield outside the post and back in again. That was the pick of the two finishes. I mean, the first one shifted the momentum of the tie. The second was a killer. And the second, when he looks back technically, I think he'll be even more proud of. And this was a guy, to emphasise, who had never scored in the UEFA Champions League before. And he got two, and he got two in extra time at the home of the champions, who had never lost a European tie before under Jurgen Klopp. I mean, it's a staggering achievement.
And we've just seen Llorente being interviewed on the pitch, quite teary-eyed. It's a huge night for him anyway. But when you think what he's been through this season, fated at Real Madrid, when we go back to the 2017 Champions League final, the talk was how in the following season, him and Casemiro would be alternated by Zinedine Zidane because he was that highly thought of. And then you reach this point, he has this €40 million move to Atletico, which is meant to be the making of him, which is meant to be the perfect place for him to show his full potential. He's 25, he's not a kid anymore, and he spent a lot of this season kicking his heels. 8 starts in La Liga, not a single start in the Champions League, and he comes on, influences it like this, and now it must feel for him, it can be his season, and this can be the moment where his very promising career really takes off.
And it's funny with Morata scoring as well. There are two players who've been close at Real Madrid, but have had to, you know, go away to try and relaunch themselves. And I know that they're still players who are right at the peak and right at the top of the European game, but they still feel like they've got something to prove, you know. And that was part of the attitude that I think still permeates Atletico Madrid as a whole.
Well, that's when it becomes cultural, isn't it? And I think you were talking about this, Richard, pre-match, about how Liverpool fans will pass on to generations and generations of Liverpool fans the culture of winning European nights like that, normally, and how within a group of players you also get a culture. And even though the group has changed, Andy, and we've talked about a lot on the show about the personnel turnover, most notably the likes of Rodri and Antoine Griezmann and Diego Godin last summer, that culture still exists. You can see it in the way they play and the way they celebrate results like that.
And I think you saw it by the way that Diego Simeone was doing his Mourinho touchline run as well. I mean, this is a guy who still feels it. People have called time on his Atletico Madrid career so many times, and he has been a coach, more than a coach, a figurehead who's transformed the club, who's transformed them from a middling, sometimes qualifies for Europe club into one of the elite UEFA Champions League clubs.
Well, it's an unprecedented run in the elite competition of European football for the club as a whole. Mm. And any manager at any club anywhere, frankly, any professional club who lasts 8 years, but any manager who after that 8 year spell, and we're into the ninth year, is still providing the same kind of intensity that he provided on the first day. I mean, that is a staggering achievement, personally.
And actually, you don't actually see many head coaches transition teams anymore. The way you would have, say, Sir Alex Ferguson go, that's a generation, I'll bleed in the next one because I know this group are ageing. Simeone does seem to be able to do it.
But
he does seem to have that skill.
As you say, Ferguson tended to bleed those players in. I mean, give or take, I think the big change in 94, 95, when three big players went, the level of turnover that he's had to deal with in the last year, year and a half, it's absolutely extraordinary. And in terms of his energy and appetite, just FYI, when Mourinho did his touchline run at Old Trafford, 41, Simeone, 48.
There we go. And Mourinho, of course, out this week with Spurs in the Champions League. Let's get the thoughts of someone from the Atletico camp now, Kieran Trippier, who says they never underestimated Liverpool.
You know, Liverpool are very strong at home. You know, I played them in Premier League so many times, and we just needed to stick together, keep our defensive shape, try and frustrate them as much as we can. And we knew we'd get our chances, and it's just about being clinical in that moment, and we sure was tonight. You know, you don't want to look too far ahead, obviously. There's some fantastic teams still in the competition, but we just need to focus on ourselves, keep believing like we did tonight, and who knows what happens at the end of the season.
Kieran Trippier, of course, who was on the losing side in the Champions League final last year, while it's Spurs facing Liverpool, I'm sure that meant a lot to him, called Wayne Rooney by his teammate Diego Costa for having a mild resemblance to Wayne Rooney. Let's get the thoughts of the Liverpool camp next. Here's the Liverpool vice-captain, James Milner.
I think, obviously, we played well, created all the chances, had all the play. They didn't really have any chance until the first goal, and then obviously after that we were chasing the game, and that's why I got the rest. But I think the performance up until the first goal that they got was top. Probably should have scored more goals, and you know, they're a good team and a tough team to play against, and they defend very well, so the amount of chances we got shows how well we played, and unfortunately we didn't take enough chances early on, and once they got that first goal it changed the game.
James Milner, who came on in the latter stages of the game, there were just 167 seconds between Firmino's goal and the strike from Llorente, his first of the night. And Llorente's only the second sub ever to score twice as a substitute in the Champions League for Atletico, the previous Aguero against Chelsea. Nearly 11 years ago.
Marcus Llorente is not going to go on to have the same goal-scoring career as Aguero, which makes his contribution tonight all the more remarkable.
That's the kind of analysis that makes this podcast priceless, Richard Conley. But from a Liverpool point of view, look, you heard James Milner there, and it's something we talk about on the show a lot, and it sounds like an old cliche, but I feel in the Champions League it really does matter about taking opportunities, because teams are so packed with individual talent that if you don't take your chances, even if a team's not playing well, and Atletico did play well tonight, I'm not saying that, they will kill you off and knock you out in the blink of an eye, as happened tonight.
It's knockout football, isn't it? I mean, in the end, you don't get rewarded for being the best team over the course of the season. You know, you get rewarded for winning individual games. And the star players that for Real Madrid have really hurt Atletico Madrid over, you know, the last 5 or 6 years, you know, that's the example, really. You can have a team that can produce moments of quality in these repeated mini occasions that can go all the way and be crowned kings of Europe. And Atletico have had it done to them, and they have been the team dishing it out this evening.
OK, so the holders are out. We'll have another name on the Champions League trophy at the end of this season. Let's move on to Paris Saint-Germain versus Borussia Dortmund. Mike Sewell, watch this one in a deserted Parc des Princes.
Di Maria with the corner this time. It's really good corner! Headed in by Neymar!
stooping ahead of his marker to put Paris in front on the night and draw them level in the tie. They now have the advantage due to Neymar's away goal. Now he's scored at home. Di Maria just outside the area, lays it off, driven in, flicked on by Bernat into the far corner, and right on the stroke of half-time, Paris double their lead through Juan Bernat. An unlikely goal scorer, but an important one nonetheless. Mbappe is standing on his chair in the dugout. Delight all around from Paris Saint-Germain. They now lead 2-0 on the night, 3-2 on aggregate. Anthony Taylor looks at his watch and blows his whistle, and Paris have turned it around. And for the first time in 4 years, they have made it to the quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League.
Yeah, as Mike mentioned there, of course, first time in 4 years, last 2015-16, and the sixth time in their history that Paris Saint-Germain have reached the Champions League quarterfinals. Mike joins Andy, Richard and myself. Mike, did Paris Saint-Germain deserve their place in the last eight, do you think?
Yes, they certainly did. I mean, we've seen in recent seasons, summed up by the fact that they haven't made it to the quarterfinals for 4 years, that they've been really fragile in the knockout phase. I mean, even when they made it to the quarterfinals prior to that, they had this run of going out at that stage. But tonight, they were robust. They had the mental strength, and they showed it even when they found themselves on the back foot a little in the second half, where Dortmund had a lot of possession. They were the stronger team. They dominated the first half with the possession, and they scored the two goals, and a rare diving header for Neymar. Not the greatest defending, I have to say, from Dortmund. Hakimi let Neymar go, but it was a deserved half-time lead, and it was something that they held on to, because, to be perfectly frank, Dortmund were impotent in front of goal tonight. They had two shots on target, not notable shots on target really, and Erling Braut Haaland, who obviously has been talked up a lot this season with his performances for Salzburg and for Dortmund since his arrival during the January transfer window, was completely nullified. I'm just looking at the statistics, 20 touches over the course of the night, no shots on target.
And I guess a lot of Borussia Dortmund fans will say, Mike, that this is typical of Dortmund away in the Champions League. I mean, this goes back to the biggest games they played in the group, for example, at Inter and at Barcelona, where they seemed a little bit intimidated, this young team, by the occasion and by the opposition almost.
Yeah, they lost by two clear goals, both to Inter and Barcelona in the group stage. And basically, prior to this, they'd only won three games in their last 15 on the road in Europe, losing eight of them. So they aren't the strongest team away from home, but as we've seen in the past, they're a very strong team at home. It's rare that they don't go on to hold on to a home advantage from a first leg. In fact, prior to tonight, they'd only done it once, had they foregone a first leg lead at home to lose the eventual tie. But they just weren't at it, in complete contrast to their performance in the first leg. They really weren't at it tonight. They had a lot of the ball in the second half, admittedly, but I thought Paris Saint-Germain defended really well. And you have to take into account, Thiago Silva was missing, which meant that Marquinhos had to drop into central defence alongside Kimpembe. Both of those players played exceptionally well as the fullbacks. And then in midfield, Paredes had to come in as well. Verratti was out, Meunier was out, and Mbappe started on the bench. So it wasn't Thomas Tuchel's first choice 11. But they were very strong, and Neymar, particularly in the first half, performed really well. That was the kind of game where you needed him to step up, and he did that.
Andy, I was going to ask you about Neymar, because his celebrations were pretty emphatic when he scored that opening goal. Looking at his record in this round particularly is rather unusual. So 17-18, missed the second leg of Real Madrid, foot injury. They go out. 18-19 last year, misses the whole of the United tie because of injury. Even in 16-17, he was putting Paris Saint-Germain out of the Champions League while at Barcelona, and the chief protagonist, you could argue, in that famous 6-1 win. What do you think that meant to him? Because people also have been questioning, is he absolutely the elite of the game? It felt like a big moment for him, maybe.
Yeah, and we talked about Marcos Llorente wanting to make up for lost time. I think you can say the name same for Neymar in a different situation. It's been tough on him. And unfortunately, because of the perceptions of Paris Saint-Germain, their success in the consistent success in their domestic league. His success and failure will be solely judged on his UEFA Champions League influence. And that's really unfair. It's also what they bought him for. And also,
he knew that.
Yeah, he does.
Didn't he?
He
knew that, yeah.
He does know that. And, you know, if you think he really properly announced himself in Europe with that 2015 Champions League win in Berlin with Barcelona, which was a huge moment. He got the clinching goal in that. And he'll be so frustrated that he hasn't been able to follow it up. So you can understand the relief.
A brilliant night for Paris Saint-Germain, a brilliant night for Neymar. Let's start looking ahead to next week's ties in the UEFA Champions League. Let's start by talking about Manchester City against Real Madrid. City 2-1 up from the first leg in Spain. So a great advantage for Pep Guardiola's side, Richard Connolly. Do you see much hope for Real Madrid to turn that tie around? I mean, you know, City had to come from behind, but Kevin De Bruyne leading the way, they were pretty emphatic at the Bernabeu in the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think the lesson we learned from tonight is that there is always hope when you maintain the high calibre of individuals that certainly Real Madrid still contain. I think Manchester City obviously start big favourites with the advantage from the away leg. You can't deny that. They're playing well enough. I think they've got something to prove with the domestic title having gone a long time ago. I still think it's City's to lose, but I wouldn't rule Real Madrid out having seen what we've seen tonight.
And I think generally in the last couple of years, Richard, Real Madrid's form on the road in the knockout rounds has been much better than their form at home. You know, you look back to last year, Ajax undid them at the Bernabeu after they went and won in Amsterdam, and then you go back the year before, they lost at the Bernabeu to Juventus, to Bayern Munich on the way to the final in Kiev. So really, I think Zinedine Zidane will say, look, it's not a great result from the first leg, but we have been here before and we can get ourselves out of this.
Ultimately, it is, you know, they go there knowing they have to score twice, but it's only a one goal margin. And Real Madrid have had this weird, ever since the first leg, they've had big up and downs. I mean, obviously, disappointing result of the weekend, but they have won the Clásico since the Man City game.
But the Clásico has really only been their positive result in what, the last six? And they've lost some points to lesser teams. You have to feel that when you look at them shelling points against Levante, against Betis, you know, this is a game that should really bring them out of themselves, that should really bring the absolute best out of them. And I do feel that they'll be more confident doing that on the road. The question is, in the absence of Eden Hazard, what is the best blend up front?
Yeah. Because that's something. What do you think that is?
I wonder if Gareth Bale gets a little go. Karim Benzema has been struggling of late, and I think that extra athleticism next to him would really help him do what he does best, which is drop off and look for the passes.
Lyon 1, Juve 0, of course, the two sides set to meet in Italy. Chelsea 3-0 down from the first leg in West London, and going to Bayern, Mike Sewell, it would be unbelievable if they even got close to turning that one around.
It would be an astonishing turnaround, wouldn't it, to go and get what they need in Munich to get through to the next round. I think their priorities have now completely shifted. Not that they weren't priorities before, but finishing in the top four in the English Premier League, they're in the best position so far to finish in the top four of the teams that are chasing them down. And they're also in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup as well. So their priorities are certainly on a domestic level now. They'll go to Munich with nothing to lose at this stage, given what happened to them in West London. I mean, to turn that particular deficit around would be considered incredibly unlikely. So they can go there in a kind of relaxed mode and just see if they get an early goal, they might be given a little bit of hope. You never know.
Andy, of course, they have been without Robert Lewandowski domestically. How have Bayern been faring without their number nine? Because when you actually look at Bayern's record in basically ever since Lewandowski signed, ever since he signed for Dortmund, he doesn't get injured. He doesn't miss a spell of games. And I'm sure for Bayern, this is a bit of a, oh, imagine, what can we do when he isn't available to us?
But I think they've responded to it in a very Bayern way, with collective responsibility. They had a flat performance against Augsburg last weekend and struggled to get the win there. Although Thomas Müller did, of course, pop up inevitably, undetected in the penalty box to get the opening goal and break that open. But on the whole, they've performed excellently in the two games they've played without Robert Lewandowski, and they've got so many options. You look at the fact that Serge Gnabry is ready to step up. They create so much from the full-back positions. And Müller is having his best season in a few, which really helps.
Yeah, brilliant goal as well at the weekend from Thomas Müller for Bayern. The other tie, of course, Napoli won, Barcelona won. The two sides will meet at Camp Nou for the second leg. How do you see that one going, Andy Brassel?
Well, Barcelona are going to have to play better than they did in the first leg. There's no doubt about that. They're always formidable at Camp Nou. But on the other hand, you look at Napoli, and they have hardened under Gattuso over recent weeks, and they gave a really good account of themselves for the most part of that first. They made it tough for Barcelona. They just need to get through that first half hour and then work it from there, I think.
Richard, you're just scanning their recent results, of course.
Yeah, I mean, they are going to come in fresh with the semi-final of the Coppa Italia postponed and no match in Serie A since they beat Torino back at the end of February. And I was just thinking, actually, that Gattuso is certainly having some success in imposing himself on the squad, and thinking, I wonder if Sarri is having the same success at Juve in imposing himself on the squad, even though their results over the course of the season have been demonstrably better. You know, Napoli are coming into form, and while it might be a stretch to see them going all the way, you know, we know form at this stage of the season is obviously vital for progress in UEFA Champions League. And a thought on the English clubs. I mean, I think what with Chelsea almost certain to go out away to Bayern, Manchester City now the last remaining of the English clubs. And we wouldn't have thought that at the beginning of the night, the beginning of the week.
Sure, so dominant not only in the Champions League but the Europa League last season. Let's turn it back to the Liverpool game then tonight. Atletico progressed 3-2 winners at Anfield in extra time, 4-2 in aggregate. Here's their goalkeeper, the outstanding Jan Oblak.
The game was difficult. Liverpool is amazing team. I think the team in the best shape in Europe in last year. So we knew that it's not going to be easy, that probably it's going to be a really tough game. But in the end, with our heart, we did everything until the last second to win the game.
Jan Oblak consistently, Andy, finds himself in that category. I think you put the top three keepers in the world, whoever you want to put in that list, you know. I think Alisson will certainly be in there too, but a tremendous display tonight. I think Richard had it at 35 attempts on goal from Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fantastic from him, and I think it is a reminder of just how consistently good it is and he is in this competition. If you think his first game in this competition for Atletico back in 2014, Olympiacos had three shots on target and he conceded all of them. And everything he's done since has been unbelievable. I mean, we went back to that game. We keep going back to that game at FC Bayern München in the second leg of the semi-final. He had another one of those nights tonight, and that enabled Atletico to pull off this result, which really is beyond their wildest dreams.
Did he have to make many superb saves for you, Richard, do you think?
He made some good ones. I mean, Oxlade-Chamberlain in particular had a really good first hour for Liverpool, was driving the ball at him consistently. He got the ball away from danger most of the time, far enough away from danger that the ball didn't come back into his goal. Bit of fortune at times, but he was the better of the two goalkeepers on the night.
Now, Richard, Andy and Mike, thank you very much for your company on the show tonight. That's all we have time for after another scintillating evening of Champions League action. Don't forget you can download UEFA Champions League podcast after every night of football in the competition, and you can listen to live commentary with us every match day from 1930 CET on the official Champions League app or via UEFA.com. Both of the 2019 finalists out this week, including Liverpool beaten by Atletico. We'll be back on Tuesday the 17th of March as the round of 16 second legs continue, including Manchester City, who host Real Madrid. But for now, from myself, Rob Daly, and the rest of the Matchday Live team this evening, it's goodbye.
Di Maria just outside the area, lays it off, driven in, flicked on by Bernat into the far corner, and right on the stroke of half-time, double their lead through Juan Bernat.
We're into stoppage time at the end of extra time, and a 1-2 between Marcos Llorente and Morata is in behind, and he can finish.
You've been listening to UEFA Champions League Matchday Live.